Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 24th, 2014. Wounded SPLA soldiers stage a protest in Juba over delayed payments.
There is no automatic system where you just transfer the salary to the hospital or to the unit here in General Headquarters. We don't have electronic system that is verified.
And the government says 7 released detainees should not be invited to the peace talks.
They are detainees, they are suspects, and they were out there for bail. So the court needs them back here to come and stand the trial. So you cannot include in the negotiation process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than 100 soldiers wounded in fighting between rebels and government forces blocked a major road in Juba today to protest their delayed payments. Some of the soldiers say they have not been paid for last 3 months. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer acknowledges soldiers have not been paid in a while. For VOA News, Philip Aleu reports for VOA from Juba.
The wounded soldiers storm out of a military hospital at the Geita barracks, block traffic, and even throw stones at motorists around the University of Juba Junction to demand their pay. The soldiers, some of whom had lost part of their limbs, disrupt the flow of traffic for several hours along the customs market Malakia Road. Military police surrounded the protesters to prevent them from reaching other parts of the city. None of the protesting soldiers were willing to be recorded, but they all accused the government of neglecting them. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguir admitted the wounded soldiers haven't been paid in months, but says the government has had trouble paying them to make those payments.
Some of those who were wounded in the field, they come from their original unit. For instance, if somebody is wounded in Upper Nile and is brought here, there is no automatic system where you just transfer the salary to the hospital or to the unit here in General Headquarters. We don't have electronic system that is verified.
Aguir says the soldiers wounded in the ongoing fighting that began December 15th will be paid and should be paid promptly.
So it's not a simple issue. It's being looked into it now at the General Headquarters. The administration and the finance units of the SPLA are working on their issues.
Aguir did not offer a specific date as to when the wounded soldiers will get paid. No motorists were reported injured by the stone throwing, and no soldiers were arrested during the protests. For VOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
South Sudan's government is rejecting the participation of 7 former detainees who have not been charged with any crime as a third party to the talks aimed at ending the country's 3-month-old conflict. Juba has written a letter of protest to IGAD, the sponsor of the talks, expected to restart sometime this week in Addis Ababa. IGAD mediators had proposed the SPLM leaders be allowed to participate in the talks and hopefully end the crisis. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rakaringe reports from Juba.
Foreign Affairs spokesperson Mawin McCall Arik reiterated the government's position that the released 7 political detainees must not play any role in the peace talks.
They are detainees, they are suspects, and they were out there for bail, so the court needs them back here to come and stand the trial. So you cannot include in the negotiation process people that are wounded by the court. And so this is something legal.
Whether or not include the 7 SPLM leaders as a third and a separate delegation of the talks was one of the things that stalled this latest round of negotiations. Despite the disagreement over the 7 detainees' participation, Arik says the talks will go forward.
We have a delegation. Some of them left yesterday to Addis, and some have gone today. And there will be some preliminary hearings starting the talk of tomorrow.
2 weeks ago, the judge presiding over the treason trial of 4 other political detainees ordered the 7 released detainees to testify at a special court in Juba. So far, the 7 who are released to the custody of Kenya have not returned to Juba. But he is hoping for the best at the talks in the Ethiopian capital.
Well, we hope that the talks will go well, go smoothly, and I think this is what the government here needs.
SPLM opposition spokesperson Hussein Marinyot was not available for comment as his phone was switched off. But the opposition have stated in the past they want inclusive talks in which all stakeholders are at the table. After more than 3 months of fighting, the only achievement so far has been the signing of cessation of hostilities agreement, an agreement that has been repeatedly violated by both sides of the conflict. For VOA News, I am Gumedevs Ruakarinj in Juba.
Authorities in Jonglei State's Duk County say they fear imminent attack from anti-government forces led by former Vice President Riek Machar. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says government forces are monitoring the situation and will step in to protect civilians if need be. Here is Philip Aleo again with that story for VOA.
Parliament member Philip Thornleg, who represents Duk County, claims opposition forces are converging in neighboring Ayur County in preparation to attack Duk County. He accuses anti-government forces of abducting poor civilians in Panyang area of Duk County a week ago and urged that the rebels are planning a larger attack. Leg says women and children frightened about an impending attack have already fled to the bush. Local youths are gathering in Dupadiet to mobilize and defend the county should the rebels attack. But Leg says that won't be enough.
Our fear is that if they run down the youth, they will not spare the vulnerable people who are hiding in the forests and in the swamps, leave alone their livestock, which was why we have been calling for quick action from the government army.
Leg is calling on the SPLA to deploy forces to the area immediately. Military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says pro-government forces in nearby locations will do everything possible to protect lives and property.
The SPLA is in Gadiang. Definitely, they are monitoring the situation and they will act accordingly.
But anti-government forces military spokesperson Lu Roy Kwang instantly denies his group has any plans of attacking Duk County civilians.
You know, when the clashes started in December, our forces passed through Duk County and Twik County and not even a single person was touched. These people were not touched by any of our forces because they are not a legitimate military target.
Leg insists the rebel attacked civilians in Duk last month and says nothing will stop them from attacking this area again.
This is a very bad precedent being set by the rebels. So civilians should not be actually used as hostages. This is condemned in the strongest ever terms.
Leg says locals have good reason to be afraid. He says 68,000 civilians were displaced when anti-government forces attacked Duk in February. Fighting between government and anti-government forces have continued in pockets of northern Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity states, despite the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by both sides in late January. For BOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
The United States is deploying additional military personnel and aircraft to Uganda to support operations to track down the Lord's Resistance Army LRA rebel group. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports that catching the group's elusive leader, Joseph Kony, may still prove a challenge.
As first reported by the Washington Post, U.S. officials say the military is sending 150 Special Forces personnel and 4 Osprey tilt-rotor aircraft to assist African forces in operations against the LRA. The new deployment, expected this week, adds to an existing contingent of U.S. Special Forces based in Uganda, working alongside African militaries from the region. Ugandan military spokesman Paddy Nkunda tells VOA the new aircraft will help African forces more quickly dispatch soldiers to the remote areas where the LRA is believed to be hiding.
One of our greatest difficulties, one of our greatest problems has been airlift. Our ability to airlift personnel and material has been limited, but now with this deployment, it's going to be solved.
The LRA, infamous for forced recruitment of child soldiers and a cult-like Christian-influenced ideology, has declined in recent years to an estimated 250 fighters who travel in bands across Central Africa. The group's leader, Joseph Kony, is wanted by the International Criminal Court for crimes including murder and sexual enslavement. He is thought to be hiding out in the Central African Republic. Casper Agger, a field researcher with the Enough Project, which monitors conflict in the region, says instability in the CAR, following a coup last year, has created ideal conditions for the group to thrive.
This is the dream scenario for Kony and the LRA. As long as there's instability and conflict in the areas where they are, then it provides, we can say, a smoke screen for them to continue to hide.
Some groups of LRA fighters also reportedly operate in the Democratic Republic of Congo and have been previously active in South Sudan. U.S. forces first deployed to the region in 2011 as military advisors armed only for self-defense. Since then, several of Kony's top commanders have been captured or have defected. Agger says the new deployment could be a game-changer in terms of catching Kony, but cautions against being overly optimistic.
This guy is a survivor, and he's been able to stay alive for all these years, and you can put yourself in a position where you increase your odds of getting Kony, but you also need a lot of luck for it to happen.
The U.S. military has made the counter-LRA operations a major focus of its Africa command. Congress approved $37.5 million for the effort in this year's defense budget. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk, or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine, or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused, and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN officials warn of acute food shortages in South Sudan as the conflict goes on. Stay tuned.
Tell us what's on your mind. Fridays on South Sudan in Focus, we read from your comments. You can reach us by email or text message. Our email address is southsudan@voanews.com. Again, that's southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can text message us. The number in South Sudan is 09555-84407. From outside South Sudan, you have to dial the international code followed by 211-955-58-4407. Email or text message us. We want to know what is on your mind. Tune in on Fridays when we read from your comments.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the most important thing you learned from your parents?
My parents taught me to respect people in the family, elders. They educated me. They showed me that education and respect together was good. They taught me how to behave well with people, how to like everyone, no matter how they are, whatever they did.
Honesty and hard work.
Discipline, hard work, and self-respect.
The most important thing I learned from my parents, they lived in peace and harmony from my childhood. I've seen them living in peace. They have never fought each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. United Nations emergency response officials say displaced people in South Sudan are facing severe food shortages that are only getting worse as the conflict goes into fourth month. UN officials say both sides would help save lives if they end the conflict. Philip Aleu reports for VOA from Juba.
John Ging, who oversees field operations around the world for the UN Office of Humanitarian Affairs, or UNOCHA, says hundreds of thousands of displaced people, most of them women and children, are going without food in UN protection sites and IDP camps under government and rebel control. Ging is calling on all parties to do something to stop the suffering.
There is nothing but tragedy, death and destruction from conflict. Nothing. Anybody who thinks they're going to achieve something positive out of conflict are wrong. So we appeal to everybody at every level, with any influence, with any authority, with any capacity, to help to bring this conflict to an end. The people of this country truly deserve a future which is peaceful.
Ging says the United Nations and aid agencies are racing against time to help people before the rainy season set in. David Karut of the World Food Programme says part of the problem stems from numerous checkpoints mounted by government forces that have been set up along road leading to Jonglei and into his states. At least 50 trucks carrying food and supplies are stranded on the road because of them, he says. Thousands of lives could be saved if the truck were checked quickly and allowed to continue on their way, Karut says. Tove Lansa, UNOCHA's coordinator for South Sudan, says the problem faced by civilians are mounting as the conflict drags on. He says civilians at UNMISS premises, some of whom have been living in man-sheet shelters for months now, are facing serious health challenges.
Here in Juba, you've seen the water, the stagnant water, which has health implications. You've seen the situation of the children. So we are in a really crunch 30-day period now.
UN officials are calling on the government and opposition forces to stop looting humanitarian warehouses. John Ging says this is not welcome by humanitarian agencies.
It's not acceptable to steal humanitarian assistance, to loot humanitarian premises. They are only here to help the people of this country. We cannot raise money internationally for humanitarian action if every time the humanitarian supplies are stolen, the humanitarian vehicles are robbed, and so forth.
For BOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
In what is being called the biggest capital punishment verdict by Egypt's judiciary, 529 supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi have been sentenced to death. VOA's Elizabeth Arrod reports from Cairo the hasty decision threatens to further deepen Egypt's political divide.
The condemned were convicted of killing a policeman, attacking others, and destroying property. The sentencing came after just two court sessions and before the defendants' lawyers say they were permitted to make their case. The majority was condemned in absentia, with fewer than 200 of those on trial in court. 16 suspects were acquitted. An appeal is permitted, and given the rushed circumstances of the trial, human rights and legal experts believe the verdict is unlikely to stand. Even members of the government-linked National Council for Human Rights condemned the verdict. Member Nasser Amin wrote on Twitter, "The court ruling will be overturned as soon as the defendants demand a retrial." Other legal rights advocates described it as a disaster and a scandal. Many of those on trial were arrested during fighting in the southern province of Minya, where the trial was held, after security forces dispersed Muslim Brotherhood protest camps last August in Cairo. Hundreds, possibly more, died in the crackdown, most of them supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood and Mohamed Morsi, Egypt's first freely elected leader. Thousands of Morsi supporters have been jailed since. Caught up in the crackdown are several journalists, including Australian journalist Peter Grest, Egyptian-Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed of the Qatar-based Al Jazeera network. They're on trial in a Cairo court charged with aiding what the government considers the terrorist Muslim Brotherhood. The defendants deny the charges, saying they were simply reporting the news. Grest's brother, Mike Grest, was at the court as the trial continued Monday.
We don't believe that the prosecution will be able to present any evidence to substantiate any of the charges. And more importantly, I'm hoping that another court date gets set down sooner rather than later.
The men were arrested late last year in a case that has attracted denunciations from media rights groups and others around the world. Monday's court proceedings come as Egyptian officials say the campaign for a permanent replacement for Morsi himself on trial in several other court cases, will begin in the coming days. Egyptian officials have put strong restrictions on media coverage, leaving Egyptian news dominated by praise of the military-backed government, in particular defense minister and widely assumed future presidential candidate General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Anger over Morsi's 1 year in power remains high among many Egyptians, who blame him and his Brotherhood supporters for their often violent exclusion from Egypt's political process and attempting to impose a narrowly based Islamist rule. Publisher and political commentator Hisham Qasim.
The Brotherhood decided to step out of the process. You know, it's them that should be asked to be inclusive.
But any attempts at bringing the group and its millions of supporters back into the political fold will likely be harder after Monday's verdicts. Elizabeth Arendt, VOA News, Cairo.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. U.S. President Barack Obama is in the Netherlands, his first stop on a tour aimed at isolating Russia for its actions in Ukraine. President Obama arrived at Amsterdam Schiphol Airport and headed for The Hague to immediately begin meetings with allies and partners. Although Mr. Obama is in the Netherlands for the Nuclear Security Summit, the focus is clearly on the crisis in Ukraine. The U.S. leader's aim is to build up support for more sanctions against Russia and economic aid for Ukraine's government. The U.S. Navy says it is sending a black box detector to an area of the southern Indian Ocean to aid in the search of a Malaysia Airlines jet missing for more than 2 weeks now. The U.S. Pacific Command said today that the towed pinger locator has highly sensitive listening capability so that if the wreck is indeed located, it can hear the black box pinger down to a depth of about 6,100 meters. Black box is the common term for a plane's flight recorders, which contain detailed information about what takes place on an aircraft. The search for the missing Malaysian passenger jet proved futile again so far today, despite a new French report of possible debris from the plane's wreckage floating in the Indian Ocean. And finally, police clashed with hundreds of protesters in Taipei today after the group, angry over a trade deal with China, broke into the government's chief office complex. But hundreds more remain camped out in Taiwan's parliament as the government weighs what to do next. About 2,000 police officers expelled hundreds of protesters from Taiwan's guarded cabinet offices just before dawn. The government mobilized riot squads and water cannons to oust demonstrators in a five-hour struggle. Protesters want to stop quick approval of the trade deal, calling that approach risky as China claims sovereignty over self-rule Taiwan and wants political reunification. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Today is World TB Day. The World Health Organization reports tens of thousands of people with multiple drug-resistant forms of tuberculosis are now getting treatment for this disease, thanks to a new diagnostic tools. WHO says a project that started 5 years ago is making progress in diagnosing MDR-TB patients who formerly were missed. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization says nearly 500,000 people worldwide fell ill with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis in 2012. Yet fewer than one in four of these people were diagnosed, mainly because they did not have access to the proper diagnostic services. 5 years ago, the World Health Organization and several partner agencies started a project in 27 low- and middle-income countries in an effort to reach people with MDR-TB who are falling through the cracks of their country's health systems. The director of WHO's Global TB Program, Mario Raviglioni, says the project, known as EXPAND-TB, has made progress in ferreting out many of these missed patients. He notes more than 70,000 new cases of MDR-TB were discovered in the 27 countries in 2012.
In 2008, that was a year before we started the project, these 27 countries only reported about 10,000 MDR-TB cases. By 2012, the number of MDR-TB cases that were notified by these countries tripled. In India, for instance, and it's probably one of the best examples, that is the largest recipient of Expand TB support, 16,000 people with MDR-TB were detected in 2012, with support from, again, this project. It used to be 4,000 or 5,000, so, you know, it really increased dramatically.
The 27 countries involved in the project, including 12 from Africa, are found in all regions of the world. Together, they carry 40% of the estimated global MDR-TB burden. The Global Health Initiative, known as UNITAID, is providing $87 million to support Expand-TB. Another organization called FIND is the main implementing partner. Chief Executive Officer of FIND, Katharina Böhm, says diagnostics influences about 70% of healthcare decisions. Yet, she adds, only 3 to 5% of healthcare spending goes for diagnostics. She says traditional diagnostic tests for TB can take more than 2 months to get results. However, she notes new technologies now make it possible to rapidly diagnose TB and drug-resistant TB in as little as 2 hours.
In addition to the immediate benefit to patients, Expand-TB also, however, has created or has paved the way to the uptake and rapid uptake of future diagnostic tests. FIND is currently aiming to address, in collaboration with multiple R&D partners, the most urgent needs. A rapid TB test for testing at community level to cut transmission, and a rapid test for extended drug resistance detection, which will be crucial also for the uptake of new drugs that are in the pipeline.
Tuberculosis is contagious and spreads through the air. South Asia and Africa account for nearly two-thirds of all missed cases. Most people can be cured of regular TB by taking a six-month course of drugs at a cost of around $30. In comparison, it takes about 2 years to treat people with MDR-TB. WHO says the complex regimen of drugs needed to treat the disease can run into tens of thousands of dollars in wealthy countries. However, negotiations with pharmaceutical companies have reduced the cost of these drugs to around $1,800 for patients in developing countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a traditional avocaya song from Central Equatorial State. Listening to that traditional avocaya song from Central Equatorial State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us today. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.